Blog Talk Radio.
Time now for Lydia's Literary Lowdown on Greater Good Ministries Radio. Join Lydia at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern every Saturday and get the lowdown on today's popular authors, publishers, and pundits. Lydia's Literary Lowdown, right here on GGM Radio, every Saturday, 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Welcome to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. I am Lydia Aswolf, and I have the lovely Julie Hutchings here with me today. I am a fortunate creature because I have been able to read her book, Running Home. I'm not necessarily holding that over your head as a privilege that I get that you don't, but it kind of is. Julie, how are you? Julie, are you there? You know, I've been having a lot of fun with Blog Talk Radio lately because it seems to kick my guest off for no apparent reason. I think it's just because she's prodigiously talented. Julie, are you there now?
I am here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. The worst thing in the world is to start off a show with the host going, Julie, Julie, Julie.
No one will forget my name.
That's right. That's the best thing in the world. Now, Running Home, there is a tentative release date of July the 22nd, give or take a week, right?
Right. It's looking more like take a week. So we're looking more probably a week early, if I'm guessing.
And it's only been, what, a week or two since you actually found out you scored the elusive book deal with Book of the Dead Press, right?
Yeah, it's been about three weeks altogether. And so, yeah, he moves quickly, which is no problem. That is, I absolutely love that he moves quickly over Books of the Dead. And I couldn't be more excited. I don't like to wait on anything. So this is perfect for me.
What was that whole process like? I mean, how did, obviously, if you have not been to Julie's blog, or if you don't follow her on Twitter, you absolutely should because she's freaking hilarious. That's how I met Julie, on Twitter. She tweeted 140 hilarious characters, and I thought, oh, she has voice. I must read what she has. And the really disappointing part about that was that Running Home wasn't out yet, but
oh.
I have connections. Right, Julie?
Wink, wink, nod, nod. Apparently you do. Yes, I am the connection, apparently.
Right, so I got to read it ahead of time, but just because the book isn't out yet, what you need to do is run, not walk, this is an order, not a request, over to deadlyeverafter.com. If you have not read the blog, the work that she and Kristen, right? I'm
yes,
off with names. You're lucky
yeah.
I remember your name, okay? But you should check out what both of them have to say. They will post short stories, their writing experiences. I got hooked on the blog, so I love to read it. Thank you for doing that. But here's the deal. Okay, at the time I got to know you on Twitter, again, it's Hutchings Julie, follow her. But when I got to know you, you didn't have the book deal in place. So how did this all fall into place for you?
It happens hard and fast, and you'll be querying and querying and querying, and I just said querying about seven times in a row, so there's that. But, you know, I queried 1,000 people, I feel like, and I had just submitted a short story to put on Roy Daly's blog. Deadly Ever After, Books of the Dead. And he had put that up maybe a month ago. It's a little short called The Threat. And he said, you have a full-length book out, don't you? And I said, no. He asked me to send it in to him during an open submission period, and he loved it. So I was incredibly, incredibly lucky.
You were not lucky. No, I'm going to bully you. You were not lucky. You were extremely talented. If you can catch someone's eye, I'm a voracious reader. If you can catch my eye with 140 characters and make me go, I want to read whatever she has out there, that's not luck, my friend. That is talent.
Thank you very, very much. And again,
hey,
you know,
even managed to sound humble and shy. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. I can't thank everybody enough, honest to God. I thank everybody more than I think I thank people at my wedding. You know how you thank people at your wedding? I'm that annoying, but with everybody I know now.
Well, yeah, but you deserve it. I mean, it's kind of this whole circle of authors that you have that helps support you as Running Home's coming out. And what is that process like? First of all, I want to hear all about it because one day I hope to have a book deal, one day. But whenever you got the offer that he wanted that manuscript, what was that like?
it's surreal. It was absolutely surreal. I think it was a 5-word email that he sent me. I like it. I can get behind this. Do you want a contract? That was it. And, of course, I want a contract. Why wouldn't I?
But did you squeal? Did you scream? Did you dance?
Tears spring to the eyes right away. And I don't think the tears haven't really stopped springing to the eyes for a while now. Every time something good happens, tears spring to the eyes, and I say, I have a book deal. You know, I could find the right thing at the supermarket, and tears spring to my eyes, and I say, I have a book deal. But, you don't know who to contact first. You don't know who to tell first, and it's just, it's amazing. It's an amazing feeling because I really gave up everything that I had done before this, every job I've had, every interest I had to pursue writing, and this is the thing that I really want to do. So to get that first step in is just an amazing feeling that I could never replicate with anything else.
Right, and you are insanely talented. You can see that, and you should see that, audience. You should definitely go to deadlyafterafter.com because it gives you a great sample of what Julie and Kristen can do, and it's an amazing blog. How do you juggle, okay? Because I know I've read Running Home. We are absolutely going to discuss it, hopefully without any spoilers. I try not to do spoilers, but I also know this is a trilogy, and you have given me inside information that the first draft of this sequel is done. Do you have any kind of an outlook on when that might be coming out?
Oh, I have no idea. This is a one-book deal, and, I'm currently working on a separate related, completely unrelated project, a different book right now, which I want to have finished up by the release date of Running Home so I can get right on the second draft of Running Away, which is the sequel. And it doesn't have a home yet, although I'm really hoping that Books of the Dead will pick me up. So, Roy, if you're listening, really hoping.
Well, I don't see how it can't, because I reached the end of Running Home, and I was reading it on my Kindle Fire, so I kept trying to turn the page to get more. I wanted more.
Yeah.
I wanted more. If you
Thank
can
you.
Elicit
Thank
that
you.
Reaction in anyone, I think, especially readers, if they want more, it's like I think we all have kind of a file in our head of, okay, I'm going to be looking out for Julie Hutchings. When her next book comes out, I'm going to keep an eye on her Twitter. I'm going to keep an eye on her blog. That's what I do. I don't know if I'm abnormal. Actually, I do know that I'm abnormal. Everyone knows that. But do you do the same thing for authors that you like? Do you kind of file away when you read a new work and say, hey, there's going to be a sequel and I want to get it when it comes out?
Wow. You have no idea what that's like to hear, that I'm an author you're looking for a sequel from. All of those words don't make sense to me sometimes. But
look, that gets us right into Running Home. What I would tell the audience is, first of all, you need to buy this book. Why? Because while there are supernatural elements to it, my thought on it is that you always keep the human element the strongest, and it's very much based in reality. You know, it's a perfect urban fantasy in that it's based in the real world, and you put such an incredible new twist on a supernatural world that some might consider overdone. This is not overdone. Your expectations blow up, and your character work is just absolutely amazing because immediately Eliza, your protagonist, she kind of strikes me as that person who knows she wants something different in her life, and we've all been there. We all want something different in our life at one time or another. And she also feels that she doesn't fit in the world. And I think we've all also experienced that. So she's very relatable. Is she based on you? Is she a mixture of you and anyone else you know, or a totally unique creation?
Right there, it's the punch in the gut. Yeah, no, she is me, actually. She is very, very close to me. Eliza is something that was just kind of born out of me that I wasn't looking for. I wasn't looking to create a story so much, and she just happened upon me. You know, she's got the same fears I do. She's got the same feelings I do about thinking there's something a little bit more, thinking that she's got something a little bit else, a little bit extra, and not knowing where to put it. And, you know, not one who's an outcast in society, but one who really pushes it away. It's not something that she's being ejected from. It's something that she runs from. And, you know, Eliza was a tough character for me. I went through a lot of phases with her, and this book was a long time in writing. And I think a lot of it was because I couldn't know Eliza entirely, because I couldn't know myself entirely. I had to dig deep to find in her things that people wanted.
Was this a plotted or a pantser?
I'm sorry?
Did you plot the book out? Did you outline it? Or was this more of a pantser kind of thing?
Oh, God, you're gonna hear this one. No. I just started writing in notebooks. I've got probably a stack of, say, 10 notebooks. And you know, some of it's written in Sharpie, and it's all pages that are just stapled together, and there's just pictures stuck to it, and it's a mess. And, you know, my Kristen, who I run the blog with, she would just look at it and say, what in God's name have you done here? This is a disaster. And I actually had to translate all of that from the paper to the computer, and that was the longest process I've ever done in my life.
Wow. I mean, that's amazing. But I don't think the kind of putting it together in that way, my first novel I did is kind of a pantser thing, too. Do you realize, now that you're working on a sequel, did you do that as a pantser kind of method, or did you plot more? Because there's a lot involved in this world.
There is. And, you know, and I was surprised at myself that I didn't really have to go back and fix a lot of things, but I did go back and have to add in more depth here and there. You know, the Japanese mythology I hinted at in my first draft and didn't explore it enough. I didn't make it a strong enough trait in that novel. And so, you know, I really had to kind of go back and fix all of that. Now that I have that set in stone, writing Running Away just comes very, very naturally, very easily. And I am, Kristen calls me the wild card, you know, I don't really do anything with an outline. I just go for it. And I really spend a lot of time on every page that I write so that my edits are fairly minimal. And, you know, I write with a lot of intent but not a lot of guidance for myself.
So you already know where the story is going then, because this is a trilogy. Do you already know how it all ends?
I do.
Oh,
so, no, I won't tell you.
You're killing me here. Because, you know, I think one of the very unique factors about Running Home is the Japanese mythology that you use. And you dangle it. I would say, you know, it's like the perfect seasoning. You dangle that over me, the reader's head. You dangle it over my head, and I kind of focused on that and thought, oh, I'm going to get to learn more about this in the next book, and I can't wait. So it's like the perfectly seasoned meal. You get just enough of it to say, the whole book is exactly what a first book, it can be standalone, right? It's exactly what a first book in a trilogy should be, because by the end, you know there is a huge journey ahead of her. She's just dipped her toes in the water, Eliza has. And she knows a lot by the end of the book, but she doesn't know it all, and she's going to be schooled. I want to know all about that school. I want to be there for that journey. There's nothing. I will be that person who needles you relentlessly. When's it going to come out? When's it going to come out? When's it going to come out? And it's just structured beautifully. I love trilogies. I am a sucker for a good trilogy. And you really set that first book up beautifully. Eliza and her friendship with Kat as well.
That's the other thing.
I mean, the audience hears about, oh, it has supernatural elements. Don't let that turn you off, because, as I said, the human element is the strongest one. And I found Kat and Eliza's friendship wonderful. I mean, it was spot on. It's exactly what I'm always impressed by, fiction that is reality-based. And you've really nailed that here. Did the friendship Eliza has with Kat mirror anything, any friendship that you have in real life?
Oh, sure. You know, and not just one. I mean, really a couple of friendships I have. And, you know, of course, Kristen's the first one to pop to mind. You know, we do so much together, and she's here now. We do, you know, and I could not have finished this book without her. I don't think I could have ever gone this far without her. You know, and to have her kind of push me through it is a lot of help. But, you know, Kat has a lot of really unique qualities, and she's somebody that I don't think I've ever entirely met in one person. And Eliza certainly never had, you know, and she's a little surprised by the friendship she has with her and doesn't really understand why she's so attached to her, because, as you know, Eliza doesn't form attachments with anyone. She's had too much taken away from her, you know, and she feels like her best friend is death, and it turns out she's right. You know, but Kat really gave it the human element where she's, I'll give you that one. She doesn't turn into anything. She doesn't become anybody different. She's Kat from the beginning to the end of the book. And
right, and
I
like
think that,
I like that continuity. I really like that. But even more so, I think a hugely compelling reason to read any author, you in particular, is for the risk they are willing to take with their characters. And I think you take some risks that really pay off. I'm not going to tell you about an audience. I'm not going to tell you what happens. You have to read it for yourself. On or around July the 22nd, Running Home comes out. You need to read it because Julie takes some real risk. At one point in the book, I was in absolute shock. You know what point it is, Julie, because I think I referred to it in my gushing email back to you. But there is a point in the book where you lay it all on the line, and you don't fall into the temptation I think so many other authors do to make it all nice, neat, pretty, and tied up with a neat little bow. You don't do that. You take real risk with, let us say, how can I do this? You take real risk with a particular character, and you make it as it would be in real life. You don't take the path of less resistance. You go right up to the wall, and then you climb over it. And I really admired that. There's not a question
in
that. There's no question in that. It's just a statement. I warned you before you came on the show, excessive praise is part of the gig. So now you're just going to have to suck it up and take it like a woman, aren't you?
I am. I'm taking it. I'm standing alone in a room. Kristen's a separate room. I can't look at anybody. I'm probably five shades of red. Thank you. And to hear anybody gush about something that you work so hard on and believe in so much and is such a part of you it's an almost nauseating feeling, but it's a wonderful feeling.
Well, you need to get used to this question, too, because this is so unusual. As I said, this is just taking a genre that's established and putting a totally different twist on it in the best of ways. How did, you're going to hear this a lot, it's kind of a cliche question, but I have to know, how did you come up with this?
Well, you know, the vampire story just kind of fell out, you know, and that it came from a time in my life where I just had a baby, my first baby, and, you know, that's something that really made a lot of emotion in me that I didn't know I was ever capable of having. You know, I don't want to say reserved person, but I'm a very protected person. And, you know, I've experienced a lot of death in life. I've experienced a lot of having things taken from me. And so me and Eliza, we're soulmates in that way. So, you know, the more that I started to write, the more that started to unfold. And the vampire story just kind of happened. And I will say it, I'm going to come right out and say it. I was at Walmart and looking for something to read. I mean, you know, I'm on maternity leave. I'm a disaster. I'm half awake, half asleep. I'm angry as all hell probably about something. And I needed a new book. And what's there on the shelf but Twilight, which I had every intention to never read. And I just grabbed it because there it was. And, you know, I fell for it right away and couldn't understand why. Because, you know, it's just ordinary people. It's ordinary characters that an extraordinary thing happens to. And yet it's meant for kids. And I said, you know, we deserve something like this as an adult. We deserve something extraordinary happening in ordinary lives. And I wanted to make that different. So, you know, where the Japanese mythology comes into it is that I'm a black belt. I've done martial arts half my life. And, you know, that's really where the Japanese mythology came into it. It's something that's very strong in my life and something I really thought could be unique that I could blend into it. And, you know, it was a selfish reason. You know, I could do all of my favorite things at once. So,
but that's not selfish at all. It's not selfish because you're putting a totally different anticipatory nature to all the readers who read it, which is, I want to know. I want to know all about the Japanese mythology. I, too, was sucked into Twilight. I still don't know why. I mean, that's like the junk food of the literary world. It's like a potato chip. You can't read just one Twilight. I read them all. So, and I can't put my finger, and I'm pretty good about putting my finger on why I like things and why I don't. That whole series, I cannot put my finger on. No offense to Stephanie Myers or the huge world that she created. I just don't know why I liked it. But I have to say that your book, no one should expect that sort of situation in your book. This is
it's for adults.
This is about a empowered female who comes up against the wall, and she really realizes what's at stake. But she looks at it, and she draws inner reserves of strength that Bella in Twilight did not have. That's
thank you.
Period. No. This is not to be denied.
Yeah, well, that's still, thank you. Still scary to hear, but, you know, and Eliza in this trilogy, too, I mean, you'll see her make more decisions that are, you know, they're faulty. You're going to see her change a lot. You're going to see, she doesn't just fall into this vampire world with all of these Japanese ties and, you know, leaving everything she has behind. She doesn't just fall into it and automatically fall in love with it. You know, it she goes through a lot of road bumps through it, and they change her, not always for the better. So you'll see her journey through three books. She really becomes somebody different. And I love it.
You can see the shadows of that in Running Home. And you can see that this is not a situation in which Eliza must be saved. So, I mean, I guess my hackles rise a little in your benefit, where Twilight is, in that this is very much for adults, but it's also very much an adult woman who takes responsibility for herself. There is no vampire, no knight on a white horse. There's nothing like that.
Yeah.
And if anything,
no, there's not a whole lot of saving these people.
Right, and if anything, she turns away from incredibly strong temptation. She turns away from it. She walks away from it at her own expense, because there are some things she is not going to tolerate.
Right, she makes those very clear decisions, and they're not always the favorite decision for everybody, you know, and people try to drag her back from them, and she goes sometimes, you know. It's never just an ultimate decision that she just gives in. She never really gives in to anything. She does exactly what she wants to do, and, you know, she makes very hard decisions. She makes hard decisions that nobody should have to make, and, you know, thank God none of us do, but the decisions that she makes, they affect everyone. Not just her. It's not just about being in love. It's not a love story per se. It's something that is about fighting. You know, it's about fighting from wherever you are and getting to somewhere better.
Right, and she does a spectacular unheard of, especially in my opinion, because I've read a lot of vampire stories, okay? They're kind of my crack, besides those Thin Mint cookies, do you know what I'm saying? Girl Scouts Thin Mint cookies? Yeah, those vampire stories, I will check out just about any vampire story, okay? But this, you just have to get it out of your mind that this is a vampire story. You have to almost get it out of your mind that this is a Twilight-esque story, because none of that is true. It's absolutely not true. This is a very, very original twist. I have read loads. My first vampire book was Salem's Lot, age 10, okay? And I was around when velociraptors roamed the earth, people. So I've read a lot of vampire fiction since then. This turns, it's a original, fresh, breathtakingly fresh premise that turns everything upside down, and it puts the humans, both Kat and Eliza, they are in control. It is at no time is it these vampires that are just glittering in sunlight. Doesn't happen, people. It's not that. The human element is what makes this book special. It may be about vampires. That may enter in there. But there's question, in my mind, it's questionable that you could even label Nicholas or Chris or Roman, the three characters, it's questionable to me that you could call them vampires, because they don't have that kind of roaming around, seducing women, taking blood when they need it mindset at all. They have a totally different mindset. And you set up a mythology in this book I simply have not seen before in any vampire lore. That's something you should be proud of, especially given the fact. Okay, this is the fun part for me. Okay, so Julie Hutchings came up with Running Home when she might have been involved in postpartum blues after the birth of a baby, on maternity leave, sleep deprived. She comes up with this excellent idea. I really want to beat you with pointy sticks till you bleed. Do you realize that?
Oh, if you had known, I think probably that was probably the easiest part, with being on maternity leave. After that, you know, go back to work full time. And
but these are fully fleshed characters. I mean, Eliza leaps off the page. She's a fully fleshed protagonist. You know who she is in a matter of pages. You know who Kat is as well. And they are fully fleshed. They have their flaws. They have their quirks. And you know people like them.
Oh, it absolutely took work. I mean, they didn't just. They weren't just they didn't just appear in my mind. I mean, they took work, they took edits, they took drafts, they got rejected just as much as anybody does in life. So, you know, it definitely took a lot of work. It didn't just happen overnight like that. Absolutely not.
But you make it look like it did. That's what all the best authors do.
Yay. Thank you. That's a good one here.
So you just don't know
down.
What to say. Man, I'm telling you, you need to flood at Hutchings Julie with as many compliments as you can. I don't care what they are, just so long as they're complimentary. And then I want a photo of your red, red face.
Okay. Be careful. Just Kristen probably has her phone out right now.
That's it. I want, you know, you just tell Kristen, the more I praise you, because this is a book that deserves praise. You know, I did not even want to bring up the word vampire because I don't think that strictly fits in this situation. They have
well, you know, and it
a
is something
purpose.
That everybody shies from. Well, everybody shies from that word, you know, and even, you know, even when I was pitching it, you know, like, God, how do we get around the word vampire? How do we get around it? And, you know, it's such a double-edged sword because, like you said, you'll read anything that has the word vampire on. You'll read it. It's a saturated market, but everybody wants it. It's saturated because there's a call for it. And so it's a pop culture icon. The vampire is a pop culture icon. Everybody can relate to it. Everybody wants to live forever at some point. You know, everybody wants to have that kind of pull with people. Everybody does. And, you know, to say it's not a vampire book is just as good to me as saying it is. And I did almost lose that vampire element altogether when I started researching the Japanese death god and, you know, the Shinigami and what, you know, what they meant in the Japanese mythology that I turned. You know, it's not a strict Japanese mythology. I made a lot of it up, but I used that as my basis. You know, I really almost just took the vampire out of it entirely because I just didn't want that stigma held over it. And I said, you know what, this is the goddamn book I want to write. This is the book I'm going to write. So I'm glad I did. And for anybody out there who thinks that they shouldn't be writing a vampire book because it's been overdone, write what you want, goddamn right. And it doesn't matter what that vampire book is or if it's a book about anything, just write what you want to write. Because writing a good book is the thing that's going to save you.
But also be aware, as you've mentioned, the rejections are out there. I mean, how did that affect you? Is it a situation where you had to believe so strongly in this that you weren't going to give up no matter what happened? Or did it ever affect you, some of the rejections you received?
You know, I mean, of course rejection affects you, but, you know, I never cried into the teacup over it. You know, I was always ready to push on. I really have a strategy behind what I did, you know, and even the people I was querying, none of them were really the one that I wanted. It was all just a matter of trying to get the next step and find out what they thought of the book, find out what they thought of the query, find out where I was going wrong if I was. And, you know, if there was anything I could tweak or anything that I would absolutely not move because this is my book, you know. And so when I got this deal, I was shocked and overjoyed because it's really the book that I meant to put out there. It's the book that I wanted. And, you know, the thought of self-publishing always pops up, but I didn't want to take the easy way out. I really felt like traditional publishing was for me. And you had it gotten rejected a million times? Sure, but it didn't. You know, the fact of the matter is that somebody saw in it what I saw in it, and so I'm really pleased that I went traditional and that I didn't change it and that it's something that I believe in. And thank you, Roy, not making me change anything either. You know,
I wouldn't want you to. I just wouldn't want you to because it's good as it is. But a thorny little question here. If it sells really well, you could have the option to then prove those sales to a literary agent and get one. Would you do that or would you just continue on your own?
You know, I know when to put things in the hands of a professional, and I know what I don't want to do, and I don't want to do all of the marketing myself. You know, I really want to be the creative end of it. I don't want to have to do all the business part of it, and, you know, if it does sell really well, God, I can't even think that far ahead, but, I mean, sure, if I get that offer, I probably would, but I would certainly never leave Books of the Dead in the dust because they're the ones who gave me this opportunity. And,
right, and,
you know,
I don't think I could get that kind of opportunity, which so many authors want nowadays, so many aspiring authors, and then just kind of spit in the face of the person who gave it to me.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. You know, they love this book as it was. There was no content changes, and that I am forever grateful for. Forever grateful.
But there didn't need to be. I mean, not everyone is that talented. I'm just going to say it. Not everyone can come up with a totally different view of the, and again, I'm still, because there is a purpose here, we don't often assign vampires with purposes. There is actually a higher purpose for them to do what they do in running home. It is not a purpose I have ever read before. I'm absolutely intrigued because Julie dangles it in front of me like a carrot, and I'm running after it. That's all there is to it.
Come on, carrots. Nobody wants carrots.
Well, I like carrots with mustard because I'm a little bit twisted. Speaking of twisted, when we come back, God knows what we'll be talking about next, but tune in. We're going to go to a quick break here. You are listening to Lydia's Literary Lowdown on WGGM.
Hello, everyone. Bea Delosier here with a rundown of GGM Radio's brand new schedule. Boy, have we got some wonderful new programs with great new hosts. A little something for everyone. On Mondays at 11 a.m. Central, it's Messages of Light with Amanda Dowell for an hour of psychic chat and inspirational guests. Mondays at 7 p.m. Central, it's time for Primarily Paranormal with psychic Tina Marie. Share an hour with Tina and Bob Weber of Gulf Coast Paranormal. On the second and fourth Tuesday of every month at 8 p.m. Central, it's the Back to Brilliance Hour with Lynn Hoft and Vivian Hildebrand, an hour devoted to your spiritual growth. Wednesdays start at 11 a.m. Central with Maggie Holbeck and Crystal Clear Coaching, featuring motivational inspiration to get your life back on track. At 1 p.m. Central, join Claudia Cleary on Wednesdays with Namaste Nutrition for an hour of soothing chat all about good health, positivity, and spiritual balance. Thursdays, start your day at 9 a.m. Central with Nancy Murdoch and Mastering the Art of Joyfulness. Let Nancy and her special guests lift you out of that rut and get you back in your groove. At 8 p.m. Central, join Dr. Gregory Scott for the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour. Gregory offers spiritual education to further you along your path to enlightenment and empowerment. Fridays at 12 noon Central, it's Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Join Brenda for an hour of inspiration and motivation, featuring a lineup of today's most popular authors and guests. Friday night at 7 p.m. Central, enjoy an hour of psychic chat with spot-on reader Tasha Harris and the Angels Network. Saturdays begin at noon Central with Bea Delosier, yours truly, and the Metaphysical Edge for psychic chat and interesting guests ranging from UFO research, paranormal experiencers, and all things metaphysical. At 2 p.m. Central on Saturday, it's Audrey Quinn and My Beauty Angel, an hour created just for you with tips and tricks on how to be the best you can be with what God has given you. Sunday is a day of service here on Greater Good Ministries Radio, each week featuring a different interfaith minister bringing joy, upliftment, and unfoldment for body, mind, and spirit. First Sunday of the month is Conversations Beyond the Edge with Dr. Gregory Scott. The second Sunday of the month is the Empowerment Hour with Reverend Barbara B. Delosier. Third Sunday of the month is the Light Givers International Sunday Service and Worldwide Source a Nation Celebration. The fourth Sunday of the month is In His Presence with Evangelist Patricia Benneman. Hope you will join us live for all of our Greater Good Ministries radio programs, but if you can't be with us in person, you can hear any of our programs on demand in archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/ggmradio. And remember, all of our programs now stream live from our home site, www.ggmradio.com. Wishing everyone warmest blessings, always in love, light, and sound. Music provided by Orville Bird. musician extraordinaire. Visit him at orvalbird.com and get a hold of all of Orval's wonderful music.
Welcome back to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. If we went a little over the break, that's just because Julie Hutchings is that good, right? So we were talking about Running Home, her book, and I'm kind of on the fence about this being like a vampire thing. I think she takes amazing risk, and at the end of the book, this is what I was, I mean, I don't want to reveal everything, okay? I can say there is an absolutely shocking happening in this book. And I can say when I got to the end of the book, it was set up. I wanted to scream. I wanted to beat Julie. I wanted to hurt her. And then I thought, I cannot hurt her, for she would kick my ass, being a black belt. That's first. My second thought was, you cannot harm a hair on her head, no matter how split and uneven the ends. That's evil. Okay. She has shiny, glossy mane worthy of paragraphs devoted to it. All right? But what I'm saying is, by the time I realized I could not harm her. Part of the reason for that was I can't harm her because I must know what happens next. I must know what happens next. I mean, there's a shocking death in the book perpetrated by someone you would never see. I'm not going to reveal any more than that. But, the way that you've set this up is literally Eliza is going to be in a totally different environment. She does not have a choice. She has nowhere to go. She has very little to, she's realized this situation. And what I really liked about that is she realizes it in such a way, you write it in such a way that she has nowhere else to go. You back her into a corner and she has to face everything unflinchingly. But due to everything you've planted, beautifully foreshadowed in the book, you have some idea of where she's going next. So give us a few hints.
Okay. We've already established, she really feels like she doesn't fit in. She feels like death is the only friend she has. It's the only thing that's ever constantly around. And as soon as she gets close to anyone, it takes that person from her. So it just kind of backs her into this isolated corner. And, you know, here she is. She stays in the Ossipee Woods of New Hampshire, actual place. You know, which is just a solitary area, and she talks to no one. She doesn't date anybody except this girl Kat, who she lives with, and she's known forever. And you know, you really find out that, yeah, I don't know if I should give it away, but sure, that it really was that way. She really is backed into this corner. Death really does take everyone from her with a purpose, and that's where the Japanese vampire mythology came from. Is that this is a higher purpose that they have, and from birth, that's where you're designated to go, is to be a vampire, and you know why you're a vampire. Maybe I won't give that away, but it's something different that I kind of cooked up with everything that I love. Again, you know, martial arts and vampire books and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and a lot of things come into it. Iron Man, a lot of things.
Oh no, I love all those. That just makes me want to read on, because I am a comic book junkie. I really am, and I'm a movie, like, oh, come on, Avengers 2, come on, Thor 2.
Yeah.
I really am geeky in that way.
Oh, so am I. So am I. I do love a comic book, so it worked out perfectly. But
I think that helps.
I
mean, I think you can see the reflection of someone who enjoyed comic books, and I think there is, in every author, there is some level of them being outside looking in. I think that's required, because that's how you observe. That's how you came up with Eliza. It's not just that she's based on you, because you came up with Kat. You came up with Chris Lynch. You came up with Nicholas. You came up with Roman. These are all huge characters in this book. They're each different, and yet you feel that you know them each. You have met them each. And the greatest test, in my opinion, of a character is, do you feel as if you could meet them in person? Would you have a good time with them? Would you have a bad time with them? I would absolutely spend time with Eliza and Kat, no doubt. And I'd have my way with Roman if I weren't a happily married woman for many years.
Yeah, he's a heartbreaker, that one, without even trying to be. And Nicholas is, and he doesn't even, he knows it. he knows if he doesn't take advantage of it. You know, it's a little different. I like that about my leading men. They're men. They're not vampires. They're men. And, you know, Chris Lynch, I think you see that the most in. He's a, my friend Kristen, who knows this book probably better than I do at this point. Chris, but yeah, he's her favorite character. And, you know, I wrote not a bunch of short stories, but a couple of short stories. The Love Abominable is up on my, it is actually being published by Opening Lines this month in July. And there are a couple sequels to that person's point of view. And so I had a lot of fun writing because I hate that character. I hate him. But he's twisted, and so he's a lot of fun to write from.
Yeah, but I'm
question?
With you.
That wasn't even a
I'm
question.
With you. And that was one thing I wanted to bring up, is that Chris Lynch, the character, I did not like him at all. Like, and that's part of the beauty, because when we meet him in the book, he's not offensive at all. He's not offensive. He just isn't.
Right.
He's okay.
Right. You just don't like him.
Well, yeah, I didn't like him, and I didn't have any clue of the chaos he'd create later. I didn't have any real clue who he was, but you went out of your way, not necessarily to make him sympathetic. I think ultimately you did redeem him. Ultimately, you did make him sympathetic. But here's the thing. Here's the trick with that. While Julie makes Chris sympathetic in the book, near the end, all right, there's going to be fallout from it. There's going to be huge, big, I'm predicting right here on air, there's going to be huge, huge, huge fallout from actually showing, I don't want to say the human side, because, again, these are not vampires who are just vampires, who are totally different, who are alien to everything you've known. They're human. They have a gig. They have a job. That's right. They don't work 9 to 5, but they have a gig. It's
right.
A worthy gig. It's not about bad versus good. They're all supposed to be doing the same thing. Chris sometimes doesn't necessarily follow the rules.
Right, and he's just sick. He's sick. You know, when he was human, he was a twisted person, and he's twisted as a vampire. It never goes away. You know, and so that I really wanted to intensify that in the book, and it gets more intense as you go along, and yet you get to know him a lot better in the coming sequels.
Right, but you did that in this book. You took him from where I disliked the very sound of his name to where I was questioning his motives. Like, hey, wait a minute, he could be doing this and he's not doing this. Why is he not doing this? Uh-oh, what does that mean? And then ultimately, his reaction to a certain trauma, shall we say, in the book, well, it's not even that. The trauma hasn't even hit. That comes in the sequel. And I really like to bitch slap you because I can't read it. That said, okay, you realize by the end of the book that he's not, you realized all along he's not one-dimensional in any way, shape, or form. He is fully fleshed. That said, you realize that where a lot of people would say, okay, well, he's just going to be bad and he's going to keep being bad. He's going to be twisted. He's going to torture. He's going to kill. He's going to maim. He's going to create chaos. He does not necessarily do that. He's not your all-evil bad guy. He has motivations. I think it is bittersweet that at the end of this book, a realization comes home that he's capable of so much more than you revealed earlier in the book. Did you intend that to kind of unfold that way?
Yes.
You did very well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I really didn't want him to be somebody that it took you by surprise, but you just had... I didn't want him to be one-dimensional. I don't want any of my characters to be one-dimensional. They all make bad choices. They all do terrible things at times. And that's how it should be. You know, that's how people are, and that's how it should be. I don't want to read about a person who always does the right thing. I don't want to read about the good girl. I don't want to read about, you know, the guy who is just a woman. I mean, you know, that's not what I want to read. I want to read somebody that can be real.
And you've juggled, you know, what's interesting to me is that you've successfully juggled. I mean, there's Nicholas, there's Chris Lynch, there's Roman, there's Eliza, there's Kat. That's five characters. Five characters who, you know, we get to see through Eliza's eyes, but who are fully fleshed. Did that take a lot of work to create those five characters as individualized and complex as they are?
It did and it didn't. I mean, I know a lot more authors that are far better than I am at creating a character and know every aspect of, you know, where they went to school and what they eat for breakfast, and, you know, and I just don't. about my characters, but I really wanted to see, I wanted to see them through the eyes of another person. You know, you never really know what motivates a person. You're never really going to see anybody as being good or bad entirely. You're always going to see that flicker in their eye of, oh, what were they really thinking just now? You know, and never really understand them. And that's really what I tried to write the characters from, is what other people's perception of them would be, and then try and turn it on its head a little bit to make make everyone realize that, you know, you'll never really know these characters or anybody. And I hope that keeps up through the rest of the books. I'm excited to write the rest of the books now, actually.
You should be, but I'm more excited to read them, because it kind of drives me crazy. But I think, you know, during the break, Julie and I were talking about, I've heard some people say that they really hate to get to the end of a book and have like a cliffhanger or have something that leaves you hanging. I believe that's the best part of a book. I believe that's a test of a book. If you get to the end of that book and you kind of go, oh, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But what are your views on that, Julie?
That's exactly how I feel. I want each chapter to end like that. I want each chapter to end saying, maybe I have time to read the other one. Maybe I have time to read five more pages. You know, I want that to be the feeling at the end of the book, because I want a world where I don't want to put it down. You know, I want that book that I feel like I just never want to end. And, you know, I try to create that, and I'll try and do the same in Running Away, but at the end of the trilogy, I promise you I will give you closure. I swear.
Thank God. But I bet you don't do it in number two. I bet you leave Running Away. I bet you leave that hanging too. But I want that. I mean, I want that. It makes me think of Beautiful Creatures, even though this isn't YA and it's a totally different story. I know when I read Beautiful Creatures, I had to run out and buy the next book. And if the sequel would have been on sale, I would have bought it. I would have bought your sequel immediately. And then I would have browbeat you some more if you didn't have the final book written. And then I would have asked if there are going to be any novellas in the future that might address anything you didn't get around to in the first three books. So, I mean, this is a very fertile...
It'll never end!
Well, but it shouldn't. I think, although that leads to a very interesting question. You already know how this trilogy is going to end. And what we've seen recently, I don't know if you read Charlene Harris, the Sookie Stackhouse True Blood books.
Should I say that I know them? I do a little bit. I read the first one. I just couldn't take it. I'm sorry.
Well, there was a huge
amount
of backlash on her because she continued this series well after some readers thought that, well, she was asked to continue the series, and I think she did a good job of it. That's my two cents. But there's been a recent huge backlash with the release of the final book in the series because she went beyond what she had originally intended to do, and some readers believe that she drew it out too long. You seem to have more of a firm, this is where it ends, on the book.
I do, you know, and that's not to say that I won't make companion novels to it, which is really something that I've been toying with and have been toying with since the beginning. I've got another character that I just keep kind of rolling around in my head, and it'd be great if she could be a separate story, not quite related, but with the same mythology, and I think I can do that and, you know, and still create a character that people want to read about. There's, again, Chris Lynch is somebody that people want to hear more from. Every time I put up one of the short stories about him, I get lots of requests for him, and someone, actually it was my husband, said, you should write the last book from his perspective. And I won't. Yeah.
You may not do
it,
but that's a testament to your skill with characters. If you've really written good characters, you're curious enough to think about what things might look like from, I would go with Roman myself. I think he's kind of an enigma shrouded in mystery, no matter how out you try to make him. Do you know what I mean? No matter how clearly... You know, he's a good guy, but I think there's a lot more lurking underneath the surface. Chris, I can just imagine what that would be like. But that's the beauty of creating good characters, in that you can go back and revisit it from a different perspective. And you have created characters just in this initial book, Running Home, that are worthy of their own perspective.
Oh, thank you. That's so wonderful to hear. There's no greater compliment than that, I don't think. That's wonderful to hear.
Well, other than wanting your sequels out now, not yesterday, not in 2 minutes, right now.
I'm working on stuff.
How does that feel, though? I mean, because, you know, whenever you're in this position where people are responding and will continue to respond, you've got the people who have already read the book, like myself. But when the book comes out, how prepared are you for people to kind of loudly clamor when the next one's coming out?
I can see Kristen rolling her eyes at me from the next room right now because she keeps telling me the work I'm putting out right now. The one that I'm working on right now, she's constantly saying, you've got to put that down and start working and running away a lot more solidly. And I say, I will. I'll be ready for it, you know, and I've got a pretty solid writing process, and I dedicate a lot of time to it and a lot of energy to it, and I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to write, and, you know, I will not stray from my 1,000 words a day. I promise every day to do it, and I do it, you know, and it will happen. They'll be there, and that first draft of Running Away is already there, and I have a bristling ideas of how to make it thicker and more intriguing, and, you know, and to give it something that Running Home doesn't have. I need to make sure it's always escalating and being something, not just being shocking, but being something that you want to know more about. And so it's ready. It will absolutely be there. So I'll be starting that within the next 2 weeks. I will be on the second draft of it, I promise.
Thank heavens. But what are you working on? That just leads me to the next logical question, which is, what is taking up so much of your time now? What are you working on now?
I'm working on a book that it doesn't really have a name, but it's I've been tentatively just calling it The Harpy. And again, it's kind of based in a mythology that I go completely astray with and make up something on my own, which is kind of, I guess that's my thing now, is I just take one mythology and I make it something completely different. And it's about a girl named Charity who's really, she's an interesting one. She's really a multi-dimensional character and somebody who from the beginning you say, wow, who is this chick? So she's a little scary. And then I've got The Animal, which is something I have finished. I have the first draft of finished, and a few excerpts, I think, of that are put up on Deadly Ever After. And that will be going in for its first round of edits anytime now also. So it's a juggling act, but one that I could not be happier to be doing.
How do you manage that? I mean, how do you manage to juggle? I mean, getting up at 5 a.m. is one thing, but soon enough, I mean, in a month, right? In about a month, a little over a month, you're going to see people saying, oh, I'm anticipating the next release. I want the next release. And then I'm sure of it. Watch and see. This is a prediction that will come true. And when they do, is that going to alter your current writing routine at all? Since, I mean, you're starting on the second draft in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to end up having to do it a lot sooner. And, you know, I put this routine out in place that I say, no, this is the routine. This is what I'm sticking to. I'm very much a person of habit. But, you know, I think the ideas are already bristling in my head. I'm not going to be able to wait that long. And something's going to have to take the back burner. I'm just not very good at putting anything on the back burner, hence the state of overwhelm that I have consistently.
Yeah, well, there's not enough time in the day. I mean, you have two kids.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, of course.
And how does that work out? I mean, do you, is that the 5 a.m. wake-up call, you know, for you, where it's your time alone, where you can do things, where you can interact with your characters and plot a little further?
Yes, that 5 a.m. wake-up call is my own deal. That's what I do because it's my time alone. And on Twitter, there's a 5 a.m. writer's club. Everybody wakes up at 5 before they go to work. I just wake up at 5 before the kids get up. And, you know, that's really my time to shine right there, is to really punch it out then and do all those things that I can't do while thinking about something else. I'm a multitasker by nature, but, I mean, some things just need their own dedicated time, and so 5 a.m. is it. You know,
yeah,
I'm just not the person who can stay awake. I just can't stay awake until midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning like I used to and write anymore. It's just not me now.
I wish. I can't do that either. And 5 a.m. is just way too early for me. I have to do it, but I do that for my social media. How important is that going to be kind of in your marketing campaign? Is that something you're cultivating or?
It is, you know, and I mean, and we've been working on the blog for now, it's been just a little over a year, and that was our intent to begin with. You know, Kristen and I, we're business-minded, and that was our intent with Deadly Ever After from the beginning, was this is going to be to promote our books. This is what it's for. It's just that side effect that's been a lot of fun in the meantime. Being on Twitter, you know, it's a lot of fun, and everybody knows how much I'm on Twitter, that's on Twitter with me, but the fun is a side effect of being on there to find the right people and to talk to the right people. And, you know, Facebook, we have a Facebook page now, and, you know, I've got a little street team going for Running Home. And, you know, I know that I'll quote Eric Rubin Esquire, the amazing literary agent who you can find on Twitter, that it's showbiz. Writing is showbiz. No longer can you be the introverted writer that everybody wants to talk to, but you won't let them. You've got to have a face. And, you know, lucky for me, I talk a blue streak and can never
You're
shut up.
You're hilarious. Let's not. The interesting thing is there are a lot of facets to your character. And what I mean by that is you totally cracked me up. I mean, there was no doubt. Your first tweet to me, I was like, I have to see what she's written. You go to deadlyeverafter.com and you're like, holy crap, this is a totally different deal, because you're so funny and chatty and interactive. But then, I mean, it's like a great, awesome little view into your mind. The short stories you come up with are just incredible. I mean, I look at them and go, wow. And how do you find time for all this? Okay, 5 a.m., you're up to write. That's great. Throughout the day, you're on Twitter. But you're also juggling Facebook. And soon enough, you're going to be kind of juggling something with Book of the Dead Press for marketing as well. I'm sure they're going to contribute. I mean, how are you going to – there's not enough time in the day, seriously.
There's not. There never is. And something will fall to the wayside, of course. You know, something always does. But, you know, it won't be the kids and it won't be writing. That's about all I can promise.
Those are the two most important things.
Going.
Let's not forget the husband. For God's sake, don't forget the husband.
No, the husband. No, I could never. I could never. I mean, honestly, everybody probably says this about their husband, but there could not be a more supportive, amazing person on the planet to be doing this with and for. We gave up everything for me to be able to be home full time with my kids and to write, and those are the two most important things in the world. And you know, I put my money where my mouth was. Literally, I quit the job, and, you know, and it wasn't a small job. I quit the job, and I stayed home, and, you know, that's I keep that in mind every single day, because these things that you think you don't have time for, you darn well make time for. And when you have something important, you don't let it fall to the side. You just don't.
Is it kind of awe-inspiring to think about how – because I think to some extent your life is going to change around the 22nd of July. When the book comes out, I think you're going to be looked at in a fantastic new light. You're going to probably find more people in your social network. I mean, is that going to be I suppose I worry about all those things I think aspiring authors worry about, like, oh, my gosh, where is she going to find time to do this? And then she's going to be doing edits on that. She's going to be doing edits on that. Do you think it will cut down on some of your social media presence as you try to juggle all of this?
Oh, sure. And, you know, and Twitter will probably be one of the first things you'll see. That I'll be there a little bit less, and I'll pop in and, you know, say something rude.
Yeah, but you're great at that. It shows your sense of humor, and that's something that can very much be seen in Running Home as well. Eliza has a sense of humor. Kat has a sense of humor. They have an easy friendship. And again, you know, my thing is you never forget the human element. It's the most important element in this story. That's it. It's the most important element. And that is a refreshing change, because I love the explanation on the vampire spectrum. That's what I call them. They're on the vampire spectrum. That doesn't make them
like
typical average garden variety vampires. They are on the vampire spectrum. They did not face front and center. It was the humans that faced front and center. And I admire that hugely, because oftentimes you're so busy, at least I am in my twisted little head, thinking about their powers, thinking about what it means, thinking about what it could mean. I didn't think that in this book. I thought about Kat, and I thought about Eliza, and I thought about what was going on with them. And that, to me, is the most unusual and compelling reason to read Running Home.
Oh, thank you. That's a wonderful thing to hear. And, you know, I think it's probably the exact opposite thing I worry about, too, is, you know, I mean, do people care about these people? Are they going to care about these people? Or are they going to just want more vampire action? Or, you know, I mean, it's one of those things you constantly are worried about, is does anybody actually care? And to hear that someone does, it makes me – there could be no happier or greater reward for me than to hear that you actually care about these characters like that.
Well, if you ever need a beta reader, hint, hint, nudge, nudge – ever need a beta reader?
Well, I think you know you're that person now.
Yeah, well, definitely, because I'm kind of squirming already because we don't have the sequel. But that's okay. That's okay. We will have it. And as long as I have that reassurance and DeadlyEverAfter.com and Hutchings Julie, you should definitely check all those out, because you're going to be entertained differently. That's what I'm talking about, different facets. You're entertained differently at each social media stops. But your blog, I'm entertained differently. I'm entertained differently on Twitter. And then there's the book. Thank you so much for coming on, Julie.
Thank
I have
you.
To have you on again. You must agree right now on air.
I'd love to, of course.
Okay, good. Because we are going to have you on again, maybe even before the sequel. because I'm dying to talk to you again. So much fun.
I love talking so.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for joining us. We will definitely have you back on the show.
Excellent. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, everyone, that was Julie Hutchings, or Hutchings Julie. You need to follow her on Twitter. Check out deadlyeverafter.com. She is absolutely fantastic. And make sure to give her friend Kristen a little love, too, because they co-write the blog. It's absolutely wonderful. Next week, we are fortunate enough to have the lovely Lisa Green on the show. She actually runs IndieItPress.com. I'm looking forward to talking to her. Hey, everybody, have a great week. We will talk to you later. You've been listening to Lydia's Literary Lowdown on WGGM.